This court now resumes its session.
Well, good afternoon to all assembled. And I'm Judge Gould, presiding and sitting with Judge Bennett and Judge Nelson. And our advocates should be able to see us on their screens. I first want to say that on behalf of the panel, we thank Mr. Zuberi and Mr. Campbell for appearing remotely. Also, the appellant here represented by Mr. Campbell should try to stop if you can with before your 15 minutes is gone if you want to do rebuttal argument. But for both you and Mr. Zuberi, I've probably already spilled the beans that I'm a pandemic softy. So if you need an extra minute or two and ask for it, I'll say yes. So without more discussion, we should proceed to the appeal. And appellate counsel, Mr. Campbell, could please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, this is Bruce Campbell representing the appellant Scott Griffith Collaborative Solutions. With the court's permission, I'd like to ask for 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, watch the clock and I'll try to remind you if I notice you've gone past it. But...
Thank you, Judge Gould. The principal question on appeal is whether the district court committed error in ruling that SGCS could not bring an anti-SLAPP motion against Falk's claims, which had been transferred from the Northern District of Texas under the first to file rule. And the question's been treated by the parties and by the court below as one involving a choice of law. And essentially, should the district court apply the law of Texas, which is the Texas anti-SLAPP law, which is the TCPA, or the California anti-SLAPP rule?
Can I ask a question before we get there?
Yes.
The district court granted a motion to amend the complaint below, right?
Correct.
Why doesn't that moot this out? If we give you relief, first of all, have you appealed the district court's grant of the motion? Assuming you could, have you appealed the district court's grant of the motion to amend the complaint?
No, Your Honor, we have not. Why
isn't that the beginning and the end of this case? Because if any relief we give you will apply to a non-operative complaint.
Well, Your Honor, I still think any ruling that the court could make would have a practical effect on the rights of the parties.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but that's the whole reason we have appellate jurisdiction is we don't, there's a rule of finality and we don't just delve into cases that can, with certain exceptions that could, practically benefit the parties. And I'm not sure what exception this applies. I know you've argued some exceptions here, but I'm wondering if all those exceptions are just, mooted out, if you will, by the amended complaint. Are you aware of any time where a court of appeals has addressed an appeal on a non-operative complaint after it's been amended below?
Well, I can't cite a specific case, Your Honor, but I think if the amended complaint is materially the same as the complaint that's being challenged on appeal, and so the issues would overlap.
Now, counsel, you filed, so the second amended complaint was filed, correct?
Correct.
And you filed a motion to dismiss, right?
The motion on appeal is against the first amended complaint.
No, I understand what the motion on appeal was, but I'm asking you what happened in the district court. A second amended complaint was filed and you filed a motion to dismiss, right?
That's my understanding. I need to confirm that in the record, but that's
my my understanding was that the slap suit issue was not raised as a ground to dismiss. But even if I'm wrong on that, if you have a second amended complaint and it suffers from the same problem, that it violates the relevant slap suit provision, and you make that a ground to dismiss, and you lose, and you think that's the slap suit order is an appealable collateral order, why wouldn't you appeal the ruling of the court not to dismiss the second complaint, the one that's been filed and operative? Why would you move to dismiss something that isn't extant anymore? I mean, why would you appeal something that isn't extant anymore?
Your Honor, I'd have to check the timing exactly, but I believe that the motion, the appeal was taken. I'm not sure which happened first in time, whether the appeal was taken or the second amended complaint was filed. So I could, when counsel argues on behalf of Falk, I could take a look and verify in the record. But what I was going to say is, given we filed supplemental authority with the court yesterday, I don't know if it's reached the court yet, or has reached the panel, but
yeah, we got it. I'm interested in what you have to say. It didn't look like it was relevant at all to the case.
Well, I think it is relevant, Your Honor, in the sense that let's set aside, you know, potential waiver issues, but it certainly it's the Clifford versus Trump case. And in that case, the Ninth Circuit in a memorandum disposition said that the it could consider a anti-SLAPP motions, you know, that are based on the law of other jurisdictions outside the Ninth Circuit. And here specifically, it said it could consider the Texas anti-SLAPP law, because it's really an issue of Ninth Circuit procedure, not state law, whether or not.
Right. But the district court below, I mean, let's assume we even have jurisdiction over a non-operative complaint. The district court below never made a ruling on the anti-SLAPP provision. Now, if that's immediately appealable, that's fine. But it seems to me that even under your theory, this alternative theory, you'd still have to go back and get a ruling from the court. I mean, I have no idea what Texas's anti-SLAPP statute says, but you would still have to get a ruling on the applicability of the anti-SLAPP statute, whether it's California or Texas. And that didn't happen, did it?
No, Your Honor. We never, the district court never decided the merits, because what the district court ruled was, and this is before, the anti-SLAPP motions had been filed before Clifford was issued. And so the parties, both parties and the court, I think, were under the assumption that if Texas law applies, then there can be no anti-SLAPP, because the Fifth Circuit does not allow anti-SLAPP motions.
Okay, so even if you're right about that, I still don't understand how that's a rationale for us to jump into this. I mean, I haven't heard a single hook for jurisdiction that we have over this appeal. Because yeah, even if you're right that Texas has that, go back and fight that out in the district court.
Well, Your Honor, that's what I wasn't offering that as a excuse as to why the court has or justification why the court has jurisdiction. I think it all points, whether it's a lack of jurisdiction or a superseding law, you know, that changes or at least clarifies what the ability to bring an anti-SLAPP claim or anti-SLAPP motion in the Ninth Circuit, whether it's based on California state law or the law of other states and other circuits. I think all of that would point back to kicking it back to the district court and starting over.
Okay, so are you now suggesting we should, I mean, maybe we've just resolved this case and maybe we're done. I mean, because I agree with you. I think we should, I mean, one way or another, we need to send this case back. I don't think we have jurisdiction. And it sounds like you're not fighting us on that.
I suppose that I think that, well, let's say that we had the issues fully teed up and the district court, I guess I don't know if it really matters much because the district court did not consider the merits. And so had the district court considered the merits of the anti-SLAPP motion and denied it, and then there was a subsequent amendment to the complaint, that's a little trickier issue because I think it's possible. Yes.
Let me just interject a comment, if I may, please. I share my colleague's concerns about how we could have jurisdiction on a matter relating to a complaint that's already been superseded. So if the second amended complaint, if that amended complaint has been filed, I'm not seeing how we have jurisdiction to do anything here, although we could, but only if both parties wanted us to do this. We could, if you and Mr. Zabari both agreed that it would be constructive to let you use the Ninth Circuit's facilities to mediate and see if you can resolve this before it goes back, I think we would be able to do that. But just as one, speaking as one judge, I don't see where we get jurisdiction here.
Your Honor, I think that's an excellent suggestion. I was brought into the case fairly recently, so I don't have the history to know whether, you know, what prior attempts have been made at mediation and whether mediation would be something that that would be worthwhile. I generally tend to think that it's always worthwhile, and I've had cases resolved by the Ninth Circuit mediator several times before, and so that's something that I think we would not be averse to.
And counsel, just for your rebuttal time, if I've gone back and correctly looked at the record, the second amended complaint was filed on April 7th of this year, and the notice of appeal was filed on April 26th of this year.
Okay, well, I guess the notice of the second amended complaint did beat the notice of appeal then. But I would say if jurisdiction were the only issue, you know, that this may be a case where you have, if a district court or a party could just plead around an issue and circumvent and thwart a right to appeal, then it effectively can negate appellate review. And I think that becomes problematic. I'm not suggesting that that's the case here, especially because we have a situation where the district court did not consider the merits of the anti-SLAPP motion. And if the court lacks jurisdiction, it lacks jurisdiction and it can't really opine on what should happen in the district court.
You're but, correct about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, but it would be I think we will be going back down to the district court with a new set of arguments in the sense that, you know, based on the Clifford case.
You may have that right, but that doesn't seem to be before us.
Yeah, and I recognize I brought it to the court's attention fairly late, but it's not too late to, you know, fit on remand to raise that with the district court. I guess I'd like to reserve my remaining time and
that's fine.
Refer to my esteemed opposing counsel.
That's fine. We'll hear from Mr. Zabari now.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Faisal Zabari on behalf of the plaintiff appellees, the Fall Companies, for appearing without waiving their jurisdictional objections, of course. We agree with the court's observations about the mootness of this appeal in light of the filing of the amended complaint. We cited this court's very recent decision in the Exceltis case in our brief, which held in exactly the same circumstances that another appeal was mooted by the filing of an amended complaint. This amended complaint was filed before the appeal, and the appellant actually responded to the amended complaint before the appeal was filed as well. In addition to the mootness issue, there's an alternative jurisdictional concern that we raised in our briefing, which is this is an improper attempt to seek an interlocutory appeal from a choice of law ruling without first seeking certification under 1292B. Appellant fails to cite a single case in which this court has taken up a choice of law review on an interlocutory appeal under the collateral order doctrine. And even if the case wasn't moot, the rare instances in which the Ninth Circuit has ever taken up a choice of law issue on an interlocutory appeal has always been pursuant to certification under 1292B, and 1292B certification was not sought in this case. This court also recently in the Brazil decision that we cite also held that there isn't an immediate right to an interlocutory appeal in the event of a denial of an anti-SLAPP motion, whereas here a 425.17 exemption applies. And while a 425.17 exemption, specifically the commercial speech exemption, applies in this case, the district court did not even have the opportunity to consider the issue of the exemption and instead denied the motion on an even more preliminary and threshold choice of law ruling. Certainly, if the appellant does not have the right to appeal the issue of an exemption, so too should the appellant not have the right to appeal an even more preliminary and threshold choice of law ruling. While this court has taken up the denials of anti-SLAPP motions for interlocutory appeal under the collateral order doctrine in certain circumstances, those circumstances do not exist in this case. This court in Planned Parenthood, which has become the seminal case in the Ninth Circuit on the anti-SLAPP law, held that it did have interlocutory review, but only where the district court actually engaged in the two-pronged California anti-SLAPP analysis. The district court didn't engage in that analysis here. There was no determination regarding whether the conduct alleged in the complaint constitutes protected activity, and if so, whether the plaintiffs had adequately pleaded their claims, or whether plaintiffs had demonstrated a likelihood of success based on either the Rule 12B or Rule 56 standard, whichever applies. Even the cases that the appellant cite in support of their request for collateral review outside of the anti-SLAPP arena hold that the doctrine must be narrowly construed. Both the Solar City and the Commissioner of the IRS versus JTUSA cases that are cited by the appellant on reply caution against too liberally applying the collateral order doctrine, because once you grant an order collateral order status, once you grant a ruling collateral order status, all similar orders become subject to review under the collateral order doctrine. And while we submit that it would be appropriate to revisit the issue of whether or not it is ever appropriate to take an appeal on an interlocutory basis from the denial of an anti-SLAPP motion under the collateral order doctrine, it certainly doesn't make sense to expand the scope of available review to also include choice of law rulings. While this court in Planned Parenthood continues to apply and it continues to allow for immediate interlocutory appeals in certain circumstances, it only does so in circumstances that don't exist here. In fact, the concurrence in Planned Parenthood went on to note and question whether it's appropriate to ever allow for interlocutory appeal from the denial of an anti-SLAPP motion because, among other things, it appears to conflict with the federal rules. It doesn't comply with the traditional collateral order doctrine factors because an anti-SLAPP ruling necessarily involves an examination of the merits, and because it's resulted in a proliferation of unnecessary interlocutory appeals like we have in this case. Unless the panel wants me to address anything else on jurisdiction, or unless the panel doesn't think it's necessary, I was
going to... The only question, and maybe this will... If we rule that an amended complaint moots out an appeal of a prior complaint, that's all we have to do in this case, right? I mean, that wouldn't leave anything else standing. None of these other alternative arguments we would need to address.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I have one comment. Of course, if we dismiss the case, you go back before the district court. So my practical question is whether you, Mr. Zuberi, would think it would be useful to mediate it in the Ninth Circuit before we send it back. You, of course, can mediate in the district court or privately, or if there's a second appeal that comes back to us. But I was just thinking, if both of you wanted to use our mediation, then maybe my colleagues would go along with that, though I can't speak with them.
Your Honor, I would need to seek instruction from my client on that issue. The challenge we would have is, even if we chose to mediate within the Ninth Circuit appellate panel, the underlying cases are still progressing at a very rapid speed. We have a hearing in those cases this Friday. We have multiple depositions scheduled. So, you know, it might make sense to mediate if all of that weren't going on, but if that's still going on, then it wouldn't. So we would need to take instruction from the client and also probably confer with opposing counsel to see.
Counsel, can I ask, I'm always interested in this question because usually when an appeal is taken, it divests the district court of jurisdiction, at least as to issues that are covered by the appeal. This appeal seems to cover the whole case. Why is the district court gone forward in proceedings while there's an appeal pending?
So there are claims that weren't the subject of the anti-SLAPP motion, number one. And there's also a related lawsuit that was filed by the appellants, and we didn't file an anti-SLAPP motion with respect to that lawsuit. We believe that the issues are...
And that was consolidated with this? Or
they were consolidated for the purposes of discovery only.
Discovery. Okay. Thank you.
So counsel, I mean, this is probably neither here nor there, but I did take a look at the district court docket, and I didn't see, but I wasn't really looking exactly for it, any motion made to stay the entire case for lack of jurisdiction pending appeal. Was any such motion ever made?
No, I think a motion was filed to stay one of the cases, but subsequently withdrawn by the appellant.
Yeah. Thank you.
And one other observation I'd like to make, you know, we did look at the supplemental authorities that were belatedly submitted by the appellant last night. And, you know, one of the concerns we had is the appellant is trying to reframe the issues on appeal, and they're issues that have already been conceded. You know, the district court in its own ruling recounted that at volume, in the excerpts of records, volume 1, page 9, quote, because SGC does not even discuss Texas choice of law analysis or respond to plaintiff's argument that the motion is not viable if the Texas anti-SLAPP statute governs, the issue has been conceded. Appellants in their opening brief on page 33 argue that while, quote, a motion to strike under the California anti-SLAPP statute can be brought in federal court, a motion to strike under the TCPA, which is the Texas anti-SLAPP, cannot. The Clifford decision came down before this appeal was ever filed. We think the Clifford decision is incorrect and distinguishable on several bases. Not only has the Fifth Circuit refused to apply the Texas anti-SLAPP statute in federal court because it conflicts with the federal rules, but the Texas Supreme Court, in the case we cite at footnote 8 of our brief, Castleman, noted substantial differences between the Texas and the California anti-SLAPP. The district court was correct in its application of the Van Dusen rule to first to file transfers, that the law of the transferor court should apply. An appellant should not be able to take advantage of a change in law because it sought a transfer. If we grant appellants the right to pursue any anti-SLAPP motion at this juncture, we're going to be rewarding the appellants for form shopping. And that's precisely what this court in Commercial Money, in its correct ruling, and the Supreme Court in Van Dusen wanted to protect against when they applied the Van Dusen rule to transfers under the first to file rule. I know the court's ruling appears to be that there isn't jurisdiction. I have several alternative arguments that can be made, including because this case falls squarely within the commercial speech exemption. Appellants failed to comply with this court's ruling in Planned Parenthood. They've once again pursued an evidence-based anti-SLAPP motion before discovery. They reattached all of the same evidence that was previously attached to declarations to a request for judicial notice and cannot at the pleading stage supplant the well-pleaded facts of our complaint. You know, even assuming arguendo that this court had jurisdiction, this is an example of a frivolous anti-SLAPP motion filed by out-of-state litigants who are engaged in blatant form shopping because they view the California anti-SLAPP as some sort of silver bullet. Even assuming the California anti-SLAPP applies, appellants failed to account for the commercial speech exemption. They disregarded this court's ruling in Planned Parenthood. This court's ruling in Planned Parenthood is vindicated by this case because despite pursuing an evidence-based anti-SLAPP motion, the appellant is now subject to a sanctions order for spoliating evidence that's relevant to its anti-SLAPP arguments. This is an extreme example of why this court's ruling in Planned Parenthood is so important and why this court shouldn't allow litigants to take advantage of a transfer in order to gain legal advantages they would otherwise not be entitled to in the original court in which this action was filed, which is the only court that had both specific and general personal jurisdiction over the defendant in this case.
Thank you. So we're getting some strange feedback. Good, Mr. Zuberi and Mr. Campbell, put their mics on mute for a minute. I don't know if you can hear me now, but now I'm not getting the feedback. So we'll thank Mr. Zuberi for his argument, if he's done, and we'll let Mr. Campbell have his rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge Gould. Well, counsel's cast so many aspersions and thrown out so many arguments. I'm not possibly going to be able to run those down in 2 minutes and 33 seconds, especially because this court has essentially ruled that it doesn't have jurisdiction anyway. And these are arguments that are really best presented to the district judge. I will say, though, that I discovered this case I came across it on Monday. It was, we should have filed it earlier, but I guess even if the court lacked jurisdiction, it wouldn't have made any difference anyhow. But our intention was to get the right law before this court. And I hear Falk saying that they don't want to have, they don't think that the Clifford case should even apply because the law has changed. Well, when the law has changed, you get the benefit of the new law. And so if this case, when it's remanded, whether or not California anti-SLAPP law applies or Texas, Clifford clearly rules that either one is cognizable in the Ninth Circuit. And if we questions about appealability and collateral order doctrine, I think we may be addressing that again on the second go round. But circling back to Judge Gould's suggestion, we are, SGCS is amenable to mediation and before the Ninth Circuit mediator. And so we're willing to engage in that process.
Okay, thank you. I think we should probably let the argument come to conclusion. And I wasn't going to pitch a mediation order to my colleagues in conference unless you were both enthused about it as a way to save time in the district court. But I don't hear that Mr. Zuberi at this stage feels he could endorse mediation, although he would consult with his client if we ordered it. So let me just say this case shall now be submitted and the parties will hear from us in due course. And again, we appreciate the advocacy from each of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Really appreciate it.